This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, plenty more to do throughout the afternoon. Some thoughts on name, image, and likeness once again as Lane Kiffin this time spoke out about it. Plus some interesting information from David Hale of ESPN.com on the whole thing. Also, we have to touch on the Javon Kinlaw situation, which was quite the ordeal with Javon Kinlaw going online and ripping reporter, broadcaster, whatever you want to call him, for the San Francisco 49ers. We'll get to that as best as we can. It's not really a radio-friendly thing because of the language used, but we'll try our best to clean it up and talk about that coming up. Now, we closed out last hour, however, with some sad news. Ray Liotta passing away at the age of 67, was filming in the Dominican Republic. Just a random side note about movies in the DR. This morning, I'm on the road. I'm in Greenville. I'm on the road for the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament. And we got a great setup here. Appreciate the fine folks here up in Greenville. By the way, thank you to Cruz Chevy. Always have to give Cruz Chevrolet a shout-out because they always help me get on the road by giving me a great car to always take on the road. So appreciate the fine folks at Cruz Chevy for helping me get up here with a nice Chevy Equinox, a 2020 Chevy Equinox, so pretty new, too. And that'll help me get back to town as well. So I always appreciate the fine folks at Chevy, always Cruz Chevy, that is, always helping us out and helping me on this trip as well. But great accommodations. So the whole point, what I'm getting at, is that when I woke up this morning, I got to be honest, right? I like being in studio. It's a lot easier doing a show in studio than on the road. I can actually communicate better with Trent in studio. When I'm on the road, there's a bit of an echo from the studio. It's just a little bit more it's a little bit more difficult. But it's not bad rolling over and turning on the TV and getting ready to go on the air. And I put on Jurassic Park this morning. And then I fell down a whole rabbit hole of Jurassic Park. And I saw that that movie, at least part of it, was filmed in the Dominican Republic. And then that led me to an article about all these movies, like the Godfather filmed part of that movie in the Dominican Republic. And it was an article about all these great movies filming in the DR that I had no idea. So the DR has a great history in terms of movies being made there. That's just a random sidebar because Ray Liotta was in the Dominican Republic filming a movie when, unfortunately, he passed away, I guess, overnight in his sleep at the age of 67. So just a terrible thing. If you listen to the show, you know my favorite movie is Goodfellas. I make that well known, evidently, because I've received a lot of text messages in the last hour about Ray Liotta's passing. When people hear that news, I guess they thought of me because they know how much I love Goodfellas and specifically Ray in that movie. So good. And that came out right after Field of Dreams. Now, as I closed out last hour, I was talking about Field of Dreams. He plays Shoeless Joe, and in the movie, he's batting right-handed when it's supposed to be left-handed, and they never fixed it in post-production, and so that's one of the mess-ups of Field of Dreams. And I could go on a whole nother rant. I've ranted plenty about how that movie is so overrated, but that's one of the things, too, that they got wrong in the film. Then Ray Liotta does Goodfellas. He's fantastic as he plays Henry Hill. He's so good. And I always wondered, and we could try to find a way to turn it into a sports conversation as well. Almost like a one-hit wonder. Liotta was so good as the leading man in Goodfellas. I've had this conversation with people before. How come his career, right, how come he never had another great leading role the rest of his career? Never was really given the opportunity. He's been in so many movies. Go to his IMDb page. Only Morgan Freeman and probably like Samuel L. Jackson have him beat. Liotta has been in everything for the last 30 years, but he's always playing these random, like, bit characters. You could watch any movie, and Liotta's going to show up. And I can guarantee you, if it's any movie dealing with, like, gangsters or some sort of mafia or just Italians doing bad things and any sort of, like, guns or anything, Liotta's going to show up at some point in that movie. It may only be a first scene. It may be a cameo, but you're going to see Liotta there. I mean, Liotta, he was in I could run off so many different movies. He was in that terrible movie with about crime with Brad Pitt about a decade ago that I'm trying to think of the name. Anyways, point being, he's in everything. But I think the issue with Liotta, and it's also it could be applied to just life in general. After Goodfellas, and that movie was such a big hit, and he became now a national name. I think actors, people in life, right, when you come across money for the first time, and then you go out and you kind of blow that money on all sorts of things. Like for Ray Liotta, I think he just wanted to be a leading man, that he took all of these movies in the 90s that were not great, and it kind of ruined his career, to be honest with you. There Is No Escape was a movie he did. Karina Karina with Whoopi Goldberg. Unforgettable was another movie in the 90s. You probably don't know any of these movies because they were all huge bombs. Unforgettable had an interesting plot. I caught it on cable TV a few weeks ago. My mother and I, actually, I was my parents must have been visiting, or maybe it was when I was home for the holidays. We were flipping through channels and saw Unforgettable. It has a very interesting plot. It wasn't well executed, and Liotta was the star. And so when you have a couple of bombs as the star, now studios aren't willing to cast you. And so I think for Liotta, after Goodfellas was so good, he was trying to cash in on that success, that he was kind of taking anything that came across his desk to be the lead man again in another movie and didn't really look too deep into the productions. And after starring in some terrible movies, then he was kind of relegated to always being either just that role player or having cameos, but he's been in so much. And I love Ray Liotta. And so crushing news, very sad to hear that he passed away at 67. When I get back into town, when I get back home, I'm probably going to have to watch Copland again over the weekend with him and Stallone and De Niro. Such a great movie. And Liotta is essentially Stallone's sidekick, and such a great film in the 90s. But Liotta was so good at playing just that other character. He shows up in every movie, and, oh, there's Ray Liotta, right? He was in Blow, and he was in John Q, which is such an incredible movie. And Identity is one of the most underrated movies of all time, and Liotta plays a great role with John Cusack in Identity. And I could go on and on about all the films. He's been in so many things over the years. So sad news that Ray Liotta passed away. Maybe you know him better from those commercials that he was in for all those years, right? Wasn't he doing the commercials about, like, to stop smoking or to stop using tobacco? But even to go back to my original point, like, Date Night was the movie with Steve Carell, but it was also, there was, like, a storyline about corruption. And, of course, Liotta was, like, the mafioso in that movie that was dealing with corrupt politicians. He's in any movie that had some sort of gangster role. It was always Ray Liotta playing. He was, I guess, typecasted after Goodfellas. The Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling, same idea. And the names of his characters are always the best, right? They're so, like, stereotypical. He was DeLuca in The Place Beyond the Pines. And in Date Night, he was Joe Mileto, right? They would just always give him, like, the most Italian name, and he was, like, just an Italian mobster in all of his films. And I guess that's why I love him so much. So, unfortunately, Ray Liotta. I always thought he was a great actor. I thought he deserved more opportunities than just Goodfellas. He was so good in that film, and he never had a chance to be a star in a big movie again after that. And I always thought that was too bad. But you would see him in so many films. Anyways, I've gone on long enough. I could talk about Ray all afternoon. Always a big fan of Ray Liotta. Underrated actor. If you haven't seen Goodfellas, you're missing out. But when you watch it, you'll see, you know, how talented of an actor he really could be. And unfortunately, his career was kind of, I mean, he was doing just fine for himself, I'm sure. But was kind of relegated to these second-tier roles in every movie of the 90s or the last 20 years. So, rest in peace, Ray Liotta. And certainly thoughts and prayers, condolences out to his family and just people close to him. Poor Ray. Passed away at 67 overnight in the DR. Gonna have to watch Goodfellas. Gonna have to watch Copland. Blow is great with Johnny Depp, who obviously has been in the headlines lately. Liotta was in so many. Oh, John Q. Such a good movie. With Denzel. I remember watching that on a bus trip 20 years ago, going to like Yankee Stadium way back when that movie first came out. A lot of great films in Liotta's career. Passed away at 67. Hey, to shift back to the sports world, because otherwise, if you want, I mean, it's a throwback Thursday. We could talk Liotta all afternoon. That's fine with me. But Lane Kiffin had some comments about name, image, likeness, and I think it's an interesting perspective. Now, we played some audio a few weeks ago of Dawn Staley saying something similar when she did an interview on a radio show out of the New York area. And it was a good point that seems obvious, but not really one that I had ever thought about or really had heard being discussed. And Lane said something similar these past couple of days with the whole conversation about name, image, and likeness raging on after the Saban and Jimbo comments. And Lane was talking to Sports Illustrated. And they asked, here's the question. I don't have the audio. I'll give you the text. Sports Illustrated asked him, when you were the head coach at the then Oakland Raiders, you and then owner Al Davis became embroiled in a public fight over the playing time of number one draft pick Jamarcus Russell. Do you see that starting to play out in college? That's the question. Lane Kiffin's answer, is as follows. How is that not going to be an issue? The donor pays the money for the player, and you're not playing them, and that same donor gets you hired and fired. That donor is now what? The owner. I've been there, where the owner calls and says, we need to play this guy. And I say, no, we need to play this other guy. I'll tell you what happens. You get fired. You get fired on an overhead projector. What's going to happen when the lead donor calls and says to play this guy and you don't? Do you not get fired? That's what Lane Kiffin said to Sports Illustrated. And I think he makes a great point. Now, the overhead projector, that reference, in case you're not familiar, when Al Davis fired Lane Kiffin, he then held like a press conference where he had an overhead projector. That's on a throwback Thursday. Oh, those things were always the worst. When the teacher would bust out the overhead projector, there was nothing worse. I was so it was the very end of my schooling career when they got the smart screens. And I'm sure they have those in all schools now. But the overhead projector was always the worst. It was such a terrible image, and then the classroom wasn't set up for it, so the projector was too close to the screen, and the image was so tiny, and the teacher would try to back it up a little bit, and you still couldn't see, and then they're trying to focus it, and then they're writing, you can't read, because it's just a black Sharpie on a flimsy piece of paper on the projector. But Al Davis, when he fired Lane Kiffin, busted out the overhead projector and was diagramming plays to explain to the media why Lane Kiffin was a lousy head coach and why he had to fire him. So that's what Lane Kiffin is referencing there when he says you get fired on an overhead projector. That was quite the scene 15 years ago with Al Davis and the Raiders. But Lane Kiffin makes a great point. You know, people, I remember when I was in college, right? College tuition, and obviously I wasn't even a student-athlete. I'll circle this back to the student-athletes in a moment. But when I would go to college, there was always a running joke. Because college nowadays, if you have kids, if you're saving for their college, if you put yourself through college recently, if you're putting your kids through college, college has become so expensive. It is ridiculous. It's absurd. And that's a whole other conversation we could have. But there was always a running joke when I went to college, you know, the idea that we paid X number of dollars, or, you know, our family, our parents, whatever, paid X number of dollars to be here. We could do whatever we want. That was just, it was a running joke that we would always say at school. Because college was so expensive. And it's similar in this sense that whenever people invest money, right, what comes with it? Either power or they believe power should. If you put a lot of money into something, you believe that gives you the right to be in control of said thing. And most times it usually does. It's like an investment, right? If you're going to invest in something, the amount of money you put in is the number of shares or the number of percent you get of that company, and therefore that gives you that percent of power. And if you put in more money than anybody else, you're probably going to become the majority owner. And so, same idea with boosters. If they're pouring in all this money to get these kids, right now that either is going to give them power or it's going to give them the idea that they have power. And so what I found interesting after these Lane Kiffin comments is some of the comments, the follow-ups that said, yeah, maybe the concern isn't so much with the players, but it's more about the boosters. Maybe it's not so much about the players having leverage or power or control by making money, but it's these boosters who are the ones donating the money, and now boosters already, we see this plenty of times in college sports, already either abuse their power or overstep or try to do too much or believe they have more power than they should, demand the firings of this or that, or demand this or that, or we should do this. They think they're running the show. And if they're now going to be pumping in even more money to get these players, then absolutely I could see a situation that Lane Kiffin is describing, where the guy that they paid all that money to bring into the school and he's not playing, the booster is not going to be happy. And the booster, also, they're the ones that do play a huge role in a lot of these decisions because they're the financial backers. And whenever somebody is providing the money, they're the ones that are making the big decisions. They're the ones that are having the most control because they're the ones with the money invested. And that's why we talk about Al Davis when he was alive, Jerry Jones, George Steinbrenner when he was alive. These hands-on owners, right, it can always be too much. I remember doing a segment on the show going back a while ago where I said helicopter parents, I actually think helicopter parents is a good thing. And we could have, with recent things going on in the world, we could have plenty of conversations about that. I think helicopter parents could be good, right? Parents should be involved in what's going on in kids' life. And you may not like it when you're a kid, but then you look back and you almost appreciate, or you miss, right? Maybe once a parent passes away, you wish that they would still call you up and bug you about what's going on in your life, right? Helicopter parents, I think, in hindsight, is a good thing. Helicopter owners, not a good thing. When Jerry Jones or Steinbrenner or Al Davis is involved, not good. And if boosters are going to be getting even more involved or believe they have even more power now, or because they're giving this money to bring in players, that only increases their role in the team. Not a good thing. And it's something I hadn't really thought about. Don Staley mentioned it. Because the other aspect to all of this, it's, you know, Saban did not work out in the NFL. And the theory why is because Saban's really tough on his guys. And you can be tough in college when they're not making any money and they want to go to the NFL and you're the guy that's going to put them there. But when Saban's in the NFL yelling at future Hall of Famer Jason Taylor, who is in his 30s, has a family, and is making millions of dollars, it doesn't go over so well. Right? He's an adult who's been doing it for a long time. He's not as easily controlled or intimidated as an 18-year-old where his future is in your hands. Right? Saban didn't really work. We see a lot of college coaches in the NBA go to the – or I should say college coaches in basketball that go to the NBA don't really work out because it's very different. Coaching, controlling, corralling, yelling at 18-year-olds or 30-year-old professional players who are making more money than you. And so when you talk about name, image, and likeness, those are the two concerns. That A, the players will start making plenty of money. How coachable are they? But then B, the boosters are going to be investing even more money. That how much control are they going to get? Are they going to become the quasi-owners of these teams, putting more pressure on the coaches and making more decisions for these coaches and programs? And that's not a good thing. The last thing I'll say in all this is that when I worked in minor league baseball, one of the organizations I worked with, we had new ownership come in. And I reference this all the time on the show for different situations. But we had new ownership come in, and they came from certain companies that were not involved in sports. And they tried to run a sports team the way that they ran their companies. Problem is, it's different industries, different businesses, doesn't work the same way. Sports is completely on its own. You can't run a sports team like you would run a supermarket or a restaurant or just your Fortune 500 company even. Right, sports are just completely different. It's a whole other animal. Just like you couldn't go from one industry and try to operate it the same way as the other. You can't go from construction to, I don't know, insurance and expect that the same things you do are just going to be as successful in that new company, that new industry. It's not what happens. And so a lot of times you get these owners, or in this case, boosters, right, who are successful in their walk of life, their industry, and they believe that can carry over to the sports world. You could do the same things there. And so you get owners that are making decisions that shouldn't be. In the case of college sports, you get boosters who are making decisions that shouldn't be. That's why you have an athletic director. That's why you bring in these coaches. That's why you have an athletic department and an administrative staff. And just because this guy has a lot of money and he's an alum and he's a passionate fan doesn't mean he should have any say in the actual sports decisions. Right? Leave that to the professionals. And now you get a guy who maybe, right, is really successful. In the stock market. Doesn't mean he knows what's best for the football team. He just has a lot of money. He's a fan, and he invests in said football team. But it doesn't mean it's the smart move to have that guy be making the decisions. So that's another layer of the concern with name, image, and likeness. You give more power to these boosters. They make more of the decisions. And that's not good for really any program, except their competitors. These guys, boosters, guys, gals, alum, whoever, they're not necessarily the qualified ones to be making the decisions. In regards to name, image, and likeness, David Hale did an interesting conversation. He writes for ESPN.com. We've had him on the show before. He's on Twitter at @DavidHaleJoint. And he had an interesting thread. He did an interview with a founder of a name, image, and likeness agency. And so he had all sorts of interesting anecdotes. But the one thing he said was in regards to Bo Nix when he was the quarterback at Auburn. And we could get bogged down in all the information. It's quite the thread. But essentially, Bo Nix was getting paid to do podcast appearances. He would go on a podcast once a week throughout the year. And he was getting paid, if you crunch the numbers, it was coming out to something like $500 a week for a 15-minute interview. And that was part of name, image, likeness. Bo Nix last year essentially getting paid $500 a week to do one 15-minute interview a week. And it sheds a little more light into the whole name, image, and likeness and the complaint of guys like a Nick Saban who are saying it's just pay for play. It's not going out there and doing a signing or this or that. It's finding any excuse to be able to give these guys money. And in the case of Bo Nix, he was already at Auburn, right? But the idea like, hey, you come play for our school, give you this. All you have to do is do a 15-minute interview once a week. We'll give you thousands of dollars to come play here. And it's like, okay, sure. And that's not exactly the idea we had in mind when it came to name, image, likeness. Now, you can read the full thread and the anecdotes and all the stories for David Hale online, but that was just one example of a Bo Nix making thousands of dollars last year at Auburn just simply to do, you know, a 15-minute interview once a week. And these guys already do interviews for free, right, as part of the job. It's just a way to kind of grease the palms, you could say, right? Get the money to play at the school and then come up with some phony reason or the simplest reason for how you can get them that money. All you have to do is an interview. Once a week, 10 minutes, sit down, you do an interview, you're good, here's your check for $500 for playing here, and we move forward. And that's one of the things that people kind of rail against with name, image, likeness. We'll get to the Javon Kinlaw thing as well. If you haven't seen it yet or haven't heard about it, we'll try to broach that subject when we come back. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today? It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll touch on the Javon Kinlaw situation as best as we can after what went down earlier this week with Palmetto State native, former Gamecock, now at the San Francisco 49ers. That was quite the scene for Kinlaw jumping on an interview, not even, an online stream. I'll describe it in a moment. It was pretty crazy earlier this week for Kinlaw. Unfortunately, as I said, Ray Liotta passed away earlier. We'll get to Trent's takes coming up in a little bit. Trent, when you think back to, Liotta and the many movies and your time as a movie-viewing fan, were you a big Ray Liotta guy?
Absolutely, Luke. I feel like he's the type of guy that absolutely dominated every role that he was in. And I know he didn't get a lot of leading man roles later on in his career after Goodfellas, but he killed every role that he was in. Recently, The Marriage Story with Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver – He had a decent role in that, and he was awesome. So, yeah, I'm a big Ray Liotta guy. Favorite movie of his, obviously, Luke, has to be Goodfellas. I mean, it's not even comparable. Field of Dreams. I know you don't like Killing Them Softly with the movie with Brad Pitt. I agree with you there. I do not like it. Another underrated one, like you said, is Place Beyond the Pines. I absolutely love that movie. He did a great job in that as well.
Yeah, that is a good movie. And that was the one I was thinking of. Yeah, that movie was terrible with Brad Pitt, Killing Them Softly.
Yeah.
I saw that in theaters. It was such a disappointment. And I remember when the pandemic started and we were all sitting inside with nothing to do, and my brothers and I are all big movie guys, so my parents asked for, like, movie suggestions. And I was so disappointed to see one of my brothers put that movie as one of the suggestions.
Oh, no. Killing Them Softly. No.
Terrible movie. Very disappointed. Oh, he was also in Hubie Halloween, I guess, the Adam Sandler Halloween movie. I mean, he's literally been in everything. He was in The Many Saints of Newark, which was the Sopranos movie, and it's great. If you look at his IMDb page or Wikipedia, I mean, it looks like a Morrow family reunion. Every character's name ends in a vowel because he just played all Italian characters.
It's awesome.
It was Frank Capelli, Mr. Landolfa, Jay Murata. What else we got here? Big Papa. That's a good one.
Who else would you want to play, you know, a true Italian role other than Ray Liotta? I mean, he's the first name that pops to Joe Pesci's another one, obviously, Bob De Niro. But, I mean, Liotta just stole the show every time he gets on the screen.
Yeah, he sure did. He was also in The Iceman. That's an underrated movie. Mm. That was about a serial killer. Richard Kuklinski, true story. That was a good movie. Hey, by the way, while we're on the subject of movies, they're coming out with a horror film. And, you know, I love my horror movies, but a horror film of Winnie the Pooh. Because apparently, I don't know how this works, but Winnie the Pooh, the copyright, it ran out, so it's now public domain, Winnie the Pooh. And so somebody's making a movie. They're already producing it. There's already photos. There's an IMDb page. I think it's coming out soon. I haven't seen it promoted, but it's become all the rage online in the last about 48 hours. But they're making a horror film where I guess Winnie the Pooh is, I think he's going to be the villain of the movie. So for all the kids that grew up on Winnie the Pooh, and watching the cartoons or reading the books or whatever it may be, or having even just the stuffed animals. And he was such a lovable guy in the whole cast, and Piglet and Tigger and a great crew and cast and all those guys. Well, now they're going to ruin those characters by turning them into like blood sucking, terrible animals that are coming after everybody in a horror film. So that's what you have to look forward to this summer.
Who okayed this idea, Luke Morrow? This is an atrocity. Are you kidding me?
That's what happens. I don't know how this stuff works. I don't know. You have to re-up copyrights or whatever. I don't know how, but it became public domain. It became free now that you could do whatever you want with the Winnie the Pooh characters. And somebody decided, I'm going to make a horror film with these guys. And that's what they're doing. So that's what we have to look forward to. Terrible news out of Hollywood. Ray Liotta passed away, and Winnie the Pooh just became like an axe murderer. So
at least Top Gun is coming out, right? We can look forward to that.
Yes. We'll circle back to that later on, because I have I got questions about this.
Ooh.
The new Top Gun movie. And I used to love Tom Cruise, but we'll get back to Top Gun later on. Javon Kinlaw. So I'm going to try to explain this the best that I can. Grant Cohn is the name of somebody who covers the San Francisco 49ers, and he's been very critical of Kinlaw since Kinlaw came into the league. He did not like the draft pick. He's been critical of Javon Kinlaw being injury prone, or at least having the knee injury he's been dealing with. Grant Cohn is the publisher of All 49ers. He's part of Fan Nation on SI.com. He's on Twitter. He's got a pretty big following. He does online podcasts or videos that he streams. Long story short, there's a whole backstory of Kinlaw trying to intimidate Cohn at one of the practices earlier this week. And then, as I understand it, Cohn was online doing an online broadcast, if you will, like an Instagram Live or something, and he saw Kinlaw enter the chat, if you will. I'm sure I'm not using the right terms. I'm the oldest millennial around. And so then Cohn welcomed Kinlaw in, and Kinlaw and Cohn had a conversation where Kinlaw was going after Cohn with some real tough language. Now, a lot of it we can't play on the radio. I'm on the road this week. I'm in Greenville for the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament. If I was actually in studio, I would probably spend some time, and take a really long time, to try to edit some of the audio for us to play. So instead, what we're going to do, and I'll give them credit, I'll acknowledge them, this is from a different radio show. They did some of the work. I'm just going to take it from them. It's the American way. So this is from Boomer and Geo. Boomer Esiason, former NFL quarterback, and Greg Giannotti. It's the morning show on WFAN in New York City. Grew up listening to the station. And so I figure if this is good enough for them to play on CBS radio in New York, then I guess we can use it as well. But this is just a portion, and this is going to be the clip from their radio show. And instead of just grabbing the actual audio from Kinlaw, we're going to play the whole clip of these guys talking about it this morning. But this is a glimpse. You could go find the video yourself online. A lot of it we cannot play on the radio without heavily editing. But Kinlaw went on this video, this live chat with Grant Cohn, and totally ripped him a new one. And they were going back and forth. Here's a little snippet, as they talked about it on the Boomer and Geo show this morning, of the ordeal with Kinlaw online the other night.
We played the online battle between 49ers reporter Grant Cohn and San Francisco's Javon Kinlaw. Kinlaw clearly not a fan of Cohn's, and he had no problem telling him, so I pulled just a couple of clips because this was a very long segment that pretty much highlighted the feel of this conversation between the two on Cohn's YouTube channel. Things start to take a little bit of a left turn now.
My nuts are bigger than yours, brother. Put some respect on my name.
What I said about you.
My balls is bigger than yours, brother. Put some respect on my name.
Oh, I love that. You must respect me because my balls are larger than your balls.
Oh, this is great.
All right, okay.
All right, next. You don't deal with stuff like we do.
Nobody f*** with you. You don't even understand that. Nobody f*** with you, brother. You need to go find a new job. Nobody's with you.
And then it gets a little nastier.
Great bitch. Your balls shriveled up. Good.
Hey, Javon. Javon.
So that, in a nutshell, is what you got with Javon Kinlaw. And
yeah, that's from the Boomer and Geo show this morning on WFAN in New York City. Breaking it down. You can go find the full video online of Kinlaw saying a lot worse. My two cents on all this, it's not a great look, obviously, for Javon Kinlaw. I think it's a terrible look, quite frankly. I don't think it's a good look for either. Now, I had no idea who Grant Cohn was until this story became a story. And there's plenty of people who came to the defense of Kinlaw, all of his teammates, as you would probably expect, came to the defense of Javon Kinlaw. A lot of people speaking out against a Grant Cohn. My two things. Number one, on the Cone side of things, I don't want to come off as some sort of elitist. That's not the case. I love people being entrepreneurs and making a name for themselves and doing their own things and no longer going through the conventional path in the media world. But the issue becomes when you get a lot of like the fan sites or just fans of teams trying to become the quasi-media members, these are the types of things that you can run into where they don't necessarily carry themselves with the same professional decorum because they have nobody to answer to. When you have most journalists, writers, or even somebody like me, right? I still have a boss that I have to report back to. And if I do something I shouldn't, or if I'm being a jerk, or whatever it may be, unprofessional, I'll hear about it. When you have somebody who just has their own podcast, or they have their own website, or their own blog, or whatever it may be, and they build themselves up, and they could have quite the following, and be a star, and they could do a great job, but they don't have anybody holding them in check at times. And so you just have a different, I guess, relationship or a different responsibility for some of these guys, a different way that these guys act compared to somebody writing for a paper, writing for ESPN.com, where they have bosses and they have editors and they have publishers and you have to hand your story through, you know, five different people before it gets published and you have to make sure. And they have a PR team like, we probably shouldn't say this, probably shouldn't do that. Right, for Grant Cohn, the personality he's built is that he's been really hard going after Kinlaw and other guys. And it is what it is. And I don't know Grant Cohn. I'm not familiar with his work. It's just my general thought on that side of the story. That when you have fans that suddenly become quasi-media members and they're making obnoxious videos online or they're attacking players or coaches or whatever it may be, right? There's a reason why the more obnoxious are usually those fan-run sites. That's what happens. I'm not saying it's not a good path. They shouldn't do it. I look down on them. None of that. There's just a difference between if somebody's covering the 49ers for an ESPN.com or Grant Cohn's covering the 49ers for his own podcast and website. He could say and do whatever he wants. He can make personal attacks. He may be out for more clicks than an ESPN.com. You don't need to do that when you work for ESPN. The brand is already built. When you're a Grant Cohn just starting out and nobody knows who you are originally, you have to build your brand. You have to be a little more obnoxious. You have to get your name out there. And maybe this is one way to do it. Now, again, I'm not familiar with Grant's work, so I have no idea if he's been fair or unfair to these guys, if he's been unprofessional or not. I've just followed this one story, and there's a lot of things I would suggest maybe doing differently just off of this one story. With all of that said, that may lead to situations like this, or that may lead to quote-unquote media members being very tough and making it personal with certain players. I still would say to you, though, Kinlaw cannot do what he did. You cannot stoop to that level. You get paid a lot of money by the organization to try to rise above it, to try to be above all that. Now, it can be very challenging. Any job you have that puts you in the public eye, right, people are going to say negative things about you. I could tell you that in this role. I've had plenty of people reach out with negative comments about the job I do. It's part of the gig. And it would be unprofessional, it would be a bad look, or it could be immature, it could be silly if, like, in my example, right, if I went back at them. This was not some sort of interview. This was Kinlaw going like out of his way, going online, joining the conversation to just go after Grant Cohn. You just can't do it. Maybe it's easier said than done. I know he's probably ticked that Grant Cohn seemingly is taking personal shot after personal shot at him. You'd love to stick it back to him, but you just can't do it. It doesn't look good on you. It doesn't look good on the Niners. It's not what that organization would like to see. That's not why they're paying you all sorts of money. Part of the job, when you become a professional athlete, is dealing with the media. Unfortunately, you're not always going to like all the media members. You're not going to like everything they write about you. You're not going to always think they're giving you a fair shake with all their stories. But it's just part of the gig. It's why you're getting paid as much as you are and why, you know, why the team's investing in you. And you just got to be higher than it. And some of the things that Kinlaw said, right, if you want to go on there and have a reasonable, mature debate, sure. But you want to make personal attacks. You want to use some of the bad language. You want to some of those comments we played there about what Kinlaw had to say, that's also not a great look. So I almost put fault at the feet of both these guys. But I also think at the end, right, the old, what were you taught as a kid? Two wrongs don't make a right. If Cohn was wrong in his reporting or how he would address Kinlaw or just the way he was talking about him online or on his podcast or whatever it may be, I don't have all the information, all the details. Even if he was wrong in doing some of that stuff, right, two wrongs don't make a right. Don't stoop to that level. You're a professional athlete. Try to be above it. I thought it was a bad look for Kinlaw to go on there. And while other guys probably appreciated it, and Kinlaw probably appreciated getting, you know, he probably liked getting it off his chest, you can't go out there and attack somebody like that verbally, online, as an athlete. It's just a bad look. It reflects poorly on Kinlaw. he looked bad. It makes the Niners look bad. Different people are now going to – that's the reputation you build. People are going to view him that way. And you just got to try to block it out to the best of your ability. I think these types of situations stem from having just anybody write, cover, talk about their favorite teams. But I also think with that said, athletes still have to find a way to try to be above it. But go online and find the full thing. I don't think playing that one little clip really does it justice. It was quite the scene. I don't know if I've ever really seen anything like it with a professional athlete online talking to a quasi-media member, and it's really something. Go find it online if you're a Gamecock fan, even if you're not. Watch Javon Kinlaw lose it online the other night with that Grant Cohn who covers the Niners. I understand why Kinlaw may be upset, but you can't be going out and doing something like that. We'll get to Trent's takes when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to Deshaun Watson next hour and some of the comments made after the HBO Real Sports. Tuesday night, they did their episode on Deshaun, and they talked with some of the accusers. We'll get to that. Plus, the worst fan bases in sports and why Trevor Lawrence and Sam Darnold are very much alike, but Justin Fields is the opposite. We'll get to that next hour as well. But we usually do it around this time every day, today a little later than usual. It's time to find out what's on the mind of the producer as it's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's Panther. Right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, before I get to my absolute disappointment in the Miami Heat and the franchise as a whole, I will say, obviously, I've been keeping you updated on my Ozark run here. Now, I've finished season 3. I got my mind refreshed. I believe I'm right now at season 4, episode 3, Luke, and I can tell you what, season 4 of Ozark is unbelievable. Now, I know you said part 2 wasn't up to par with what you want, but how were you feeling about part 1 going into part 2? Because I believe it's 7 episodes, right, until part 2, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, no, part 1 was great. Yeah. Now, I am curious to see. I don't want to sway you. I'm curious to see what you think of part 2.
Yeah,
but up until that point, it was fantastic. Every season, fantastic. First part of part 4, fantastic. It was the second half of season 4 that really kind of disappointed me. But those first few episodes of season 4, yeah, I think they're still excellent.
Yeah, I'm grinding now, Luke. I stayed up way too late last night after I was just very upset with the Miami Heat as a franchise after losing that horrible game at home. Can't do it, Luke. Won't have it. But Ozark season 4, absolutely phenomenal. Folks, you got to go watch it, all right? And no, Netflix isn't paying us anything here. I'm just saying that Ozark is an incredible show. Like to do that with shows, Luke. Get my mind refreshed and then dive back into it when it's a new season, especially if like I hadn't watched it in over 2 years. So I'm absolutely loving Ozark right now. And also, a little snack food note here real quick, Luke. There is a new Oreo coming out that's half Oreo, half Ritz cracker, and they're marketing as basically sweet and sour. I understand where they're going here, Luke, but I don't know if these are going to be up to my par. I like a classic Oreo. Give me a double stuff 10 times out of 10. I even like the mint Oreos. I think those are okay, but we're adding a Ritz cracker. This is not, you know, these aren't Sour Patch Kids here. They might be going in a direction of maybe like a chocolate pretzel. You know, you got the saltiness with the chocolate, but I don't like this idea that Oreo and Ritz are collabing, and there's still, you know, the cream in the middle, so I don't know what they're planning on doing here, Luke, but I'm confused right now in the snack food community.
I am intrigued, I'll say that. I'll be willing to try it. I don't know if I'll love it. I do love a good, you know, chocolate-covered pretzel, though. That's a good combination, so maybe this will be just as good. But I will say, when it comes to Oreos, I always like to keep it simple.
Mm.
Birthday cake Oreos, not bad. Double stuffed, yeah, that's fantastic, just like the normal Oreo. But that's about it. That's all I do with the Oreos. I don't care for all these different variations. Oh, you know what? The one exception I'll make? The peanut butter ones.
Ooh.
Those are fantastic.
Yeah.
But usually, I don't get too carried away. I like the classic. So immediately I would say this I'm out on, but I'm willing to try it.
Yeah, no doubt. And we might have to do a taste test live on air.
Absolutely.
We'll go get some Ritz Oreos and see what's happening. Give an honest review because we're honest folks here on the Morrow Midday Show, and that's most important. Now, speaking of honesty, Luke Morrow, the Miami Heat as a whole, and now I come on here every single day doing Trent's takes, talking about other players outside of Jimmy Butler, that being Bam Adebayo, Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, PJ Tucker, you name it. I say every single time that these guys need to step up in the biggest moments. It can't just be on Jimmy Butler's back. You mentioned the tweet from Joel Embiid last night. Could that be a sign that Joel Embiid is coming to the Miami Heat? I really hope so, to join back with his former teammate. I don't think it will happen, but I really would hope that Pat Riley might be, you know, getting out the binoculars, because this series is over, Luke. You needed to win that game in Miami, Game 5, most important game of the series, and you didn't get it done. You even stole one in Boston, Game 3, and for Boston to go on a run that they did, play phenomenal defense. And I have another question. Is Robert Williams, even though Marcus Smart won Defensive Player of the Year, is Robert Williams like the best defender on the floor, even with Marcus Smart? Because it just seems like, I know he missed a ton of time during the regular season. Apparently, he had 30 more blocks than Bam Adebayo throughout the season and missed, I believe, 30 games. So he, in my opinion, is the best defender on the floor. But when Bam Adebayo, Max Strus, and those guys aren't stepping up, you won't win a championship. We've seen it year after year after year. The Miami Heat, like you said, Luke, are just not good enough to compete with a team like the Boston Celtics, who clearly have two star players, that being Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I will say, Luke, a little sleeper here, I don't think the Celtics will win the finals if they meet with the Warriors, which they will. They're going to win Game 6 in Boston. I know I'm a sad Heat fan right now, but it's true. They will win that game in Game 6, go to the finals against the Warriors. Jaylen Brown seems like the type of guy that could win the finals MVP odds. I'm going to have to look at that and see, because I like that pick for Jaylen Brown to win the finals MVP. If the Celtics do win, I don't think so, but that's a good little tidbit there. But this team isn't talented enough, Luke, to complete. Like, I think personally, if they win against the Warriors, Luke, they'd be done in four or five games. I don't think it'd be close. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I just think for the Heat, now, look, I picked the Celtics to win the series. I do think the Celtics are the better team, but mm-hmm. I do think this whole series swung with Jimmy Butler's knee issue here these last couple of games. And once he's not 100%, then absolutely, right, the Heat can't keep up. And a lot of times it's not necessarily the better team that wins, but the healthier team. And we've seen injuries play a big role in the NBA playoffs year after year after year. And I think the health of Jimmy Butler, or lack thereof, is playing a huge role in this series. Now, I still think the Celtics would have won, but it may look a little different than how it is now, where the Celtics should finish this up at home in Game 6. And then I'm very fascinated by them going up against the Warriors. I would agree that the Warriors should certainly handle the Heat in a series. If we get Celtics-Warriors, I don't know. I think I may go Celtics to win the whole thing.
Whoa, wow. There we go, Luke. Now, if you did take that, I mean, they're plus 130 right now to win the NBA Finals. The Warriors are minus 150, which was kind of shocking to me. I thought everything was going to be still at plus money odds, but they're minus 150 to win the Finals right now. Boston plus 30, Heat plus 2,300, so our odds are out the window. Now, Luke, I was scrolling through division odds today for the NFL, and a couple intriguing ones, and I want to get your take on this. The Eagles are plus 210 to win the NFC East, all right? And I think that would be a phenomenal bet, especially with the way that they've constructed their roster throughout the offseason. Again, the only question is, can they beat the Dallas Cowboys twice this year? And also, is Jalen Hurts going to be the starting quarterback going forward? But out of these two odds, the Eagles plus 210 to win the NFC East, or the Bengals to win the AFC North at plus 210 as well. They have the third best odds, the Bengals. Super Bowl runner-ups have the third best odds to win their division. Personally, I would go with the Bengals here, picking between the two. Luke, who would you take in this situation?
Good question. I'm surprised I have the same odds. Yeah. I would probably go Eagles, but the reason why, I think the Bengals are definitely a better team. They have the better quarterback. To me, for the Eagles, I think it just comes down to them and the Cowboys. And I'm a big trends guy, and the NFC East has not had a repeat champion in, I think it's 18 years. So I think we get a new champion. And if we're picking between the Eagles, the Giants, and the Commanders this year, I'll take my chances with the Eagles. Whereas in the AFC North, the Bengals obviously had the best run last year, but that's a tough division. The Ravens should be better this year.
Yeah.
The Steelers haven't had a losing season under Tomlin. And the Browns, if Deshaun Watson plays all year, the Browns may end up winning the division. So just in terms of like odds or chances, I think the Eagles have a better chance of actually winning their division, even if they're not the better team, than the Bengals do of winning theirs.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the only thing about the Browns, like you said, is how long is Deshaun Watson going to be suspended? If you take him, I believe the Browns have the second best odds at plus 200. Ravens first, I believe plus 180. If you take the Browns, what if, you know, he missed the first eight games of the season and you got Jacoby Brissett as your starter? That roster isn't as great as we're all thinking without Deshaun Watson on it. I don't think Jacoby Brissett can go in there in eight games and win six out of the eight. I think that would be a three-game, four-game kind of split in between them. So it's going to be interesting to watch. But I still, Luke, I'm still – and I know that quarterbacks like Joe Burrow, and there's a bunch of stats that are out there, they never return after their first Super Bowl to, you know, the highest peak. But I really think that with this improved offensive line, the young wide receiver core, and you signed a bunch of guys on defense, it's just so tough to bet against the Bengals after what we saw last year in the playoffs.
Now we know, except for Tom Brady, right, most teams, after winning the Super Bowl, struggle to get back next year. I'm just curious about, because we're only talking about divisions, I'm curious how defending Super Bowl champs, how often they win their division the next year. I'll have to look into that to see if – you know, history is against the Bengals, because we always expect the teams that get to a Super Bowl, either winners or losers, obviously Cincinnati didn't win, but teams that just get to the Super Bowl usually take a step back the next year. I'm curious how much, how many of them get to the playoffs, win the division, so on and so forth.
Right.
But for the Eagles, you know, they had the worst record of anybody last year against teams with a winning record, worst record in the league. So it's an interesting debate. There's pros and cons, obviously, to the two sides. I just think the NFC East would be a lot easier than the AFC North.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I think – I don't know if the Bengals have a chance, especially with the AFC as a whole, Luke, as a conference, to get, you know, back to the Super Bowl. But in the NFC, I mean, if you're – the Rams, they have a surefire shot to go back there. I think they can beat Tampa Bay. Won't say they can beat the Packers yet, but they probably can. So the Rams would be that pick. If any team is going to go back to the Super Bowl, it's got to be the Rams.
Yeah, they would seem certainly like a safer bet in the NFC. We'll talk about Deshaun next hour. After Real Sports did their interviews, sit down with the accusers Tuesday. But when we come back, we'll wrap up hour two next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, shows are always podcasted online at Charleston Sports Radio. Or wherever you get your podcast, search ESPN Radio Charleston or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. On the road for the rest of the week here with the Citadel baseball team for the Southern Conference Tournament. They'll get back in action tomorrow night. How about the Atlanta Braves? Now, look, while we're on the subject of baseball, Memorial Day is the big day. Right? They always say in baseball, don't worry about standings, maybe even some stats, until Memorial Day. Well, we're arriving towards Memorial Day here this weekend. So probably next week, following the holiday, we'll take a look at some teams and where they are in baseball now that we've just passed the quarter point of the season and are reaching Memorial Day weekend. But speaking of the Braves, my goodness, the Phillies have looked horrendous. They gave away that game Tuesday night. Contreras looks like he could be a good bat for the Braves playing the outfield or DHing. And then last night, was it Dansby Swanson? The Braves scored a run. There was a runner on first. He scored on a wild pitch. Goes to second, a wild pitch, then a throwing error, then an error on the center fielder. Goodness, the Phillies. Braves are still trying to get over 500, and Memorial Day is looming. We'll look at some teams next week to see where they're sitting at this part of the baseball season. But when we come back, hour three, the Heat lose last night and the worst fan bases in sports. That's next.